You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome. This is Wacky Wednesday here on the Arrowhead Attic channel. I'm Adam Best, here with always Sterling Holmes and producer Richard. Going to do a little choose your own adventure today with the NFL draft, run through a bunch of scenarios. Are you ready for next Thursday?
Oh, dude, I can't wait. I'm ready and not ready. I'm ready because I'm excited for Kansas City. I'm not ready because we're doing a long show, a little special. Are we able to give the information out to everyone yet? Are we hiding it, keeping it close to our chest?
Well, it's a little late now, you know? We're going to be here live during the first round next Thursday night. We don't know exactly who will be on when, but we're going to do everything we can to have entertaining content throughout that entire, I guess, 5 hours or so.
About 5 to 6 hours. And let's be real now. That's a lot of beers that can be drunk by this guy in said time frame. I will be doing this from my basement, from the man cave, set up with the TV just plastered right in front of my dome. I will have beers being cracked left and right. I will be having, I don't really know, a bucket, a lot of food. I got to figure that part out, but I'm very excited for this. It's also my 25th or my 30th birthday that same day. So
I was like, what are you, Benjamin Buttoning? You're like,
yeah, I'm going
aging backwards.
No, I'll be 30. So the first round of the draft is my 30th birthday, and we're doing a live stream for it. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Everyone's going to hopefully enjoy tuning in and partying with us.
It is a very long wait for Chiefs fans. We're almost like the last guy that's always in the green room. Gosh, you just feel terrible for that guy. I think it was Will Levis maybe last year, the quarterback from Kentucky. He did not go off the board in the first round, I believe. And that's always tough. But it's a long, long wait when you're the Chiefs. We'll take it, though. If that's the trade-off for winning Super Bowls every other year or whatever, that is a deal we'll accept every time.
Yeah, it's a long, long way to the top if you want to rock and roll. And the Chiefs are absolutely rocking right now. But everyone listening, DraftKings is offering a fantastic sign-up bonus for new users. New customers can place a $5 first bet on any sport to instantly claim $200 in bonus bets when you sign up with our code Arrowhead. You will receive one no-sweat single-game parlay every single day. And the best part is that you'll get both rewards even if that first bet loses, like me, because I'm on an absolute... I'm cold right now, Best. It is cold in the Holmes household in regards to betting. But using our code Arrowhead not only gets you these great bonuses, but also directly supports our podcast. If you've been considering signing up for DraftKings, make sure to use the code Arrowhead to maximize your first bets. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 plus and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly and check the episode description for the full terms of the offer to see if you qualify.
Ready for the new segment?
Dude, yes.
All right, we're calling it Chiefs Draft Scenarios. So the Athletic's Dane Brugler dropped his massive 7-round mock today. Probably the most comprehensive mock draft we have, because he's become the hardest working man in draft coverage, I think. He does something called The Beast, which came out last week. He has a super in-depth profile for like 400 or 500 players. He ranks something like 1,000 guys. So he knows this draft as well as anybody. But where we come in is he's one guy. He can't know every team in the NFL and know all these players like he does. So we're going to add some specificity that may change the outlook on these picks.
And absolutely phenomenal word, Best. Look at you, you specificity.
Yeah. So we're going to kind of do choose your own adventure. What we're going to do, we're going to have who Dane Brugler picked for the Chiefs, 1 through 7, each of our picks, first round through seventh round. And then we're going to look at some guys that were on the board. We're going to look at some guys we could trade up for and some guys we could trade back for. We might need to look at the draft chart. I don't know if we're going to get that scientific with it. But we've got all the scenarios planned out, mapped out for us. And you guys chime in. You're part of this war room. We're going to decide together if we like what he did or if we want to go a different route. So pick 32. You guys, some of you guys are going to be excited about this. Some maybe not. Texas wide receiver, Adonai Mitchell, 6'2", 205, 21.5 years old. Quite the specimen. Here's Brugler's take. Overall, Mitchell needs to become a more detail-focused receiver to fully unlock his talent. But he has the body, length, loose athleticism, and catch point skills to be a chain-moving weapon. He projects as a rangy, outside-the-numbers target with the lean, limber body type reminiscent of the late Chris Henry. He is ranked by Brugler as wide receiver 6 in this class. We have some other notes here.
Yeah, this was interesting. Sorry to interject.
No, you're good.
But I got a little more information on this. At least I thought so today. He's type 1 diabetic, which obviously the Chiefs already have dealt with Noah Gray. But some folks have said, you know, when his blood sugar gets low, that makes him uncoachable, almost trying to use diabetes as a, I don't want to say an excuse, but maybe a little bit of an excuse for some of the underlying character concerns in regards to being not coachable. I don't know if everyone here probably knows Josh Briscoe, and we heard from him, and basically he's like, no, man, like that's no, sorry. That's not an excuse for being non-coachable. And I'm talking to my friend who's a diabetic right there. He's got the inside knowledge, the body knowledge, if you will, of the pancreas not producing enough insulin. So I'm sitting here going, I wonder how much of coachability is a legit issue versus him trying to sweep it under the rug. Obviously, the production that he had was phenomenal at Texas. And quite frankly, I wonder how much Rashee Rice and his now off-the-field issues have influenced what the Chiefs would potentially draft in a wide receiver. I would love to get your thoughts here, Best.
Yeah, I think the production was spectacular, but I don't think it was consistent. Actually, we have a tweet here we're going to pull up from Scott Barrett of Fantasy Points. And this is kind of a scary deal. So out of all round one receivers to average 85 yards per game or less in their best season, here are the guys: John Ross, Rashad Perryman, Jalen Reagor, 3 bust right off the bat. Quentin Johnston, maybe a bust. We'll see. Kelvin Benjamin, not necessarily a bust, but not great. Calvin Ridley, he's been awesome. Philip Dorsett, eh. Henry Ruggs, we know how that turned out. Not the best list you want to be on. Also, I heard that Adam Schefter said he expects him to go earlier than this. Than 32, probably in the top 20. So this might be a moot point unless they trade up. But if you look at guys that have gone, I think this is from JJ Zacharyson, late round quarterback. If you look at guy receivers that have gone in the top 20 since 2014, he would have the worst yards per route run out of any of them. You know, he has all the physical talent in the world. And you have to say also that Texas, and I lived in Austin for 15 years. I have a little bit of a soft spot for the Longhorns, but that offense was putrid. It was unwatchable last year. So, and also he was, he had a lot of target competition because good running back, Xavier Worthy, JT Sanders, the tight end 2 in this class. So you have to consider all those things. There's a ton of ability here, both from a talent standpoint, a play style standpoint, and kind of a character concerns standpoint. He reminds me of George Pickens a little bit.
One of the common threads of small businesses is that so few are responsible for so many things. That's what makes it vital to have the right people in the right places. This is where LinkedIn Jobs comes in, and that's why we want to tell you about them. When you're hiring for your small business, you need to find quality professionals that are right for the role. And that's why LinkedIn Jobs is so vital. They have the tools to help you find the right people for your team faster and for free. Look, LinkedIn isn't just another job board. They have a vast network of more than 1 billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else, and they do all that while making the process easy and intuitive. Look, hiring is easy when you have that many qualified candidates. So easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. 2.5 million small businesses are already using LinkedIn for hiring. You should too. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/arrowhead. That's linkedin.com/arrowhead to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Yeah, but where I'm thinking with A.D. Mitchell is those traits are first round traits. I get some of, again, maybe I was when I said elite production, I meant more or less elite traits, right? I was a little misspoken with elite production, but there's a reason why I think the majority of folk believe him. He's going to be gone pretty well before 32. If he's there at 32, I don't think it's even a question. If A.D. Mitchell is there at 32 and the Chiefs pass on him, I would be perplexed. I'd be flummoxed because he's exactly what the Chiefs desperately need, especially at wide receiver. It makes way too much sense. And you know me, I'm a massive Ladd McConkey fan. I love Ladd, right? Like if they went with Ladd instead of A.D. Mitchell, that's like one of the few guys I'd entertain. But I don't think anyone has Ladd McConkey going 20th. A lot of people have A.D. Mitchell going around the 20th spot. And there's a reason for that. Some of the off the field concerns with the Rashee Rice situation, believe it or not, maybe I'm a little less inclined to go after a George Pickens. And I mean it from this standpoint. Rashee Rice had some rumblings of red flags, but not a lot. The only time we heard about rumblings were actually post-draft from Keyshawn Johnson recently, right? That was pretty much
Dane Brugler said something one time that I heard,
but very brief.
It was very brief.
My point is, you never know with these guys. You think you can draft the best dude, a guy who would never do anything off the field, would have zero character concerns. All of a sudden he does it, right? George Pickens, he had some character concerns. What has he done in the NFL? Nothing. My point is, you never know. They're athletes. They're young guys who get a lot of money. Right? Like you just don't know sometimes. So when I see Rashee Rice do something like that, I know a lot of people say, well, now you can't draft a guy who has any concerns. But I'm sitting here going, you're building a football team, not a church choir. It bleeping sucks. It's dumb. It's idiotic. But just because a guy made a mistake in college does not mean he's all of a sudden not going to become a consummate professional now that he has more structure, sometimes more structure in the NFL. And some guys who you think would never do anything wrong, like we thought with Rashee Rice, they do. So in that aspect, I'm sitting here going, give me the guy with the talent. Give me the guy who has the more lucrative traits, if you will.
The Chiefs don't operate like that. I think they have a belief in Andy Reid and that the culture of their locker room to handle difficult cases that other franchises could not handle. So I think this is the kind of player that they might target. We may want a milk drinker, but that's not really how they roll, right? So,
yeah, ADG, great point. Kelsey was a little out there in college. Was it Willie Gay Jr. that punched his quarterback in college? I mean, even with Tyreek Hill, I mean, there were still some rumblings of Tyreek Hill as the reason why he went in the fifth round, right? It's not that the Chiefs have perpetually gone after only guys who have zero red flags. It's not been the way they've operated. If you want to say first rounders, I guess, maybe I'll entertain it, but...
That draft where they had George Karloftis and Trent McDuffie and Sky Moore, it was kind of like they were trying to build a church choir there. That draft, it seemed like they were putting a premium on character, but they don't always do that. And really, the missing piece of information for us, and if you're hiring, the resume is great. The performance is great, knowing all that stuff, but we aren't privy to the interviews. Correct. And they glean so much from talking to these kids. And, you know, people had a lot of concerns about Amon-Ra St. Brown, but the Lions saw a very specific player that had a very specific fit and a maniacal work ethic. And, you know, it's hard for us to know who the maniacal guys are, who the lazy guys are. But I will say this guy lined up outside as much as anybody. He is the truest X in this class. And that is kind of a rare and dying breed of receiver. So that is going to be harder to find, to your point. As good as Ladd McConkey is, there are more Ladd McConkeys than A.D. Mitchells, just from a pure physical standpoint.
100% agree. So for you and I think this basically means we're both going with it. Actually, what Dane Brugler says, if A.D. Mitchell is there at 32, you draft him at 32. Some of the other options of players who are still on the board, according to Dane Brugler, you have Ladd McConkey, you have BYU offensive tackle Kingsley Suamataia, you have Houston's tackle Patrick Paul, Michigan's Chris Jenkins, and Iowa State's TJ Tampa. Some of the trade-up options that Brugler lists, one spot before Kansas City, you have Illinois defensive tackle, Jerzon Johnny Newton. You have offensive tackle, Amarius Mims going at what looks like 22nd, Cooper DeJean going at 23, and then Brian Thomas Jr. goes at 16.
Yeah, and Penn State tackle Olufeshano, I think that's how you say it. I think that's how he says you say it.
I feel like I nailed my Suamataia, and you did. Never glossed over it.
No, you did. I did put pronunciation in here. These trade-up ideas, the picks are Brugler's, but I went through and tried to determine who I thought the Chiefs would go after, who would actually be targets. And we're only trading with NFC teams here. At these numbers, because I just don't think AFC teams are going to be very willing to make deals with the Chiefs. And frankly, some NFC teams might not be. Now, maybe you'll have the Patriots or the Ravens who just have the philosophy, as long as our football team gets better, we don't care who we trade with. There are some of those teams. So maybe we'll find a dancing partner. Out of all these players, Johnny Newton is just, I couldn't believe he went 31st in this draft. And if he's there, I kind of think the Chiefs have to get him, because to me, he's in the argument for best overall defensive player in this class. He's probably a top 12 to 15 prospect in this class to me. And he is a little undersized, right? So he's not Chris Jones. He's not going to take on doubles all day long. And if someone gets their hands on him, he might be a little cooked, but this guy is as quick as you'll ever see off the line of scrimmage. Shoots the gap, blows shit up. If you put him next to George Karloftis, Chris Jones, Mike Dana, Charles Omenihue, potentially FAU, that's going to be a real problem for offensive lines. So I really like him. I think trading up for a tackle, because that tackle class kind of thins out right around 2022. If they want to get a guy that's a definite starter instead of Kingsley or Patrick Paul, that might be a good area to do it.
I will say, going back to Newton, that's the only other guy for me personally that I would entertain, especially because it is at 31. The issue is you're trading with the 49ers, who I just don't think at this point they want anything to do with Kansas City, right? Since they've got the best of them a couple times now in some fairly big games. But when it comes to Newton, 13 sacks and 23 tackles for loss in the past two seasons, right? That is a defensive tackle we're talking about. That's a game-changing defensive tackle. He was Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year this past season. He's the guy I would entertain. I still think I would go with A.D. Mitchell at 32 rather than trade up, though, because of draft capital.
I want to mention Amarius Mims here, too. He plays right tackle up to this point. But if you're looking for somebody with that Orlando pace, that mythological Orlando pace upside that rarely comes, he could be a bust, but he has maybe as much upside as anyone in this draft outside of, I don't know, the three or four quarterbacks, the top three receivers, Brock Bowers, maybe John Althright. I want to say one thing here, though. Picking A.D. Mitchell here when the strength of this draft is wide receiver. Wide receiver is stronger than any other positional group in this draft. You're not going to get a Johnny Newton later. You really might get someone as good as A.D. Mitchell at 64. That could happen. That happened last year with Quentin Johnston and Rashee Rice.
Good point.
So, you know, if you're kind of trying to milk as much value out of this draft as possible, you might think about waiting until round two, potentially even trading up for a guy instead of picking A.D. Mitchell. But I do like him at 32.
The issue is, again, I think realistically you're not trading up. I just don't think teams will. Trading back, I still believe, as much as I personally would love a trade back, again, because I do agree, although I do think A.D. Mitchell is a little bit different than some of these other guys. But, you know, we say that about guys all the time, and then they end up being, well, not different or different in a bad way, right? I just think when the Chiefs could not trade out or up last year, I think good luck. Now, could part of the reason they couldn't trade back because Clark Hunt was like, yeah, you can do whatever you want, Brett. You're not bleeping trading back, dude. I don't give a shit what you say. We're here in Kansas City. You're not. Yeah, of course. Do whatever you want, Brett. But you're not. Like, you're not trading back. Again, who knows? I do think the Hunts are very hands-off as owners. I think end of the day, they want what's best for the team. When you're stacking rings and Lombardis, you don't care as much about making one night of fun compared to 5 years of glory with the player. But I still think trading back is going to be too hard. Will Levis was there last year. I don't think a J.J. McCarthy is obviously going to be there. I don't think Michael Penix is going to be there. Hell, I don't even know if Bo Nix will be there at 32, which means I don't know if a team is trading up. The fifth-year option for teams apparently is not becoming as lucrative as it once was, especially because the cap number of that fifth-year option is getting decently close to a tag, or just you extend them anyways. So I think the Chiefs are more or less staying at 32.
And also, think about it this way. Would you rather trade with the Chiefs at 32, kind of under panicked circumstances with a limited clock, or would you rather deal with the Carolina Panthers for 24 hours? I think that's probably a no-brainer for a lot of organizations. Let's just run through some of these trade-back options so people know the landscape around 32 on both sides. We have around the 40th pick, Enos Rakestraw, cornerback from Mizzou, Sterling's guy. We have Michigan corner, Mike Sainristil. I think I got that right. We have another Mizzou guy and defensive lineman, Darius Robinson. I'm seeing him kind of classified as a combo. Do you think that's accurate?
Yes, I do. And I do think that he actually makes a lot of sense with Spags. He can play both inside, outside, just based on what Spags typically goes for. I think you could actually put him on as a little lighter interior defensive lineman. And I think it'd be so fun to watch him. Again, Mike Dana does a great job, so you don't really necessarily need it, but almost that souped up NASCAR package when you see Charles on the inside, Who knows with Charles, if this is his final year with Kansas City's last year of the contract. I thought he was going to be a first rounder. Again, by the way, I thought Enos Rakestra was going to be a first rounder. So we'll see. But again, we trust Dan Brugler. He's a very, very intelligent guy.
Well, Darius Robinson was invited to the green room. He's going to be there at the draft. So that's an encouraging sign about his draft stock. I wouldn't expect him to fall out of the top 40, probably. Ohio State defensive tackle Mike Hall Jr., the other MHJ from Ohio State. Around 45, Texas wide receiver Xavier Worthy, he of the record-setting 40-yard dash at the combine. And Florida wide receiver Ricky Pearsall, who's really steaming up boards. And then a little bit later, 47, 48-ish, Oregon wide receiver Troy Franklin, who I really like. I think he might be stable, healthy Will Fuller. We will see. Or K-State guard Cooper Beebe, a guy a lot of our listeners will know. He seems to be also steaming up boards. Any of those names stand out to you? Other than the Mizzou guys.
Well, what's interesting is, and this is not trying to be a homer, but both those Mizzou guys were actually the majority, I think, of boards have them going first round. So I found that a little interesting. Cooper Beebe, huge fan of him from K-State. That's way too rich for me for a guard being your first pick. Really big fan of him. Love him. But I just don't see him making sense on the current roster construction of Kansas City. Although I understand Joe Tooney and Trey Smith and all that stuff. Can you re-sign those guys in the contracts? I just don't think it makes sense. I'm out on Xavier Worthy right now, personally. Again, sorry, it's the size. He would be the outlier. I know people bring up Tank Dell, but Tank Dell still got injured. I still think Tank Dell might be the outlier, right? I'm not going back-to-back picking guys to be outliers. That just seems... quite frankly, a little silly in my mind, although I guess you can go with Devontae Smith. He's obviously
DeSean Jackson, our own Hollywood Brown.
Sure.
But it is a little worrisome. And also you already have Hollywood Brown. I think your point with Cooper Beebe is last year we saw a Chiefs team win a championship without their first rounder getting on the field. That's very difficult to do. I understand they have a long-term view of this dynasty, but I don't think you can do that every year.
Not every year, but you can do it some years, because if you don't, you'll end up like Golden State, who I believe just, we saw the last of that dynasty and they're about to be brutal, right? They had a chance. They drafted James Wiseman. James Wiseman was a bust. I don't think it was a bad pick. You look at that NBA draft that particular year, outside of Anthony Edwards going one, you had LaMelo Ball at three. That draft was atrocious. Look it up. It's not ideal. But they had a chance. They blew it, right? They didn't develop any young guys behind them. They got the young guys pissed off. So Jordan Poole left. Now you're left with Moses Moody and Kuminga. Those guys you're going to build around now, because they did not focus on building. The Chiefs, I think, have done a really good job of building to win now, as well as building for the future. The Chiefs are trying to marry that combination, which is very, very difficult. I think FAU is that guy that's built for the future, not for the right now. But because they were in such a good spot last year, they were able and afforded to do that. Again, I think you're right, though. You can't do it every single year.
I think it's actually going to be frustrating for some Chiefs fans, because the Chiefs just aren't ever going to go all in. Even when they have a chance to be the first three-peat in NFL history, they're just not going to push all their chips in. It's not how they operate. My point here on Xavier Worthy, he is just too samesies to Hollywood Brown. I don't know how you get both of them on the field a lot this year. Ricky Pearsall, he can play. He's kind of interchangeable. He can play inside, outside. He can beat press, man, zone. He would be a fit, especially he's probably best in the slot, especially if this Rashee Rice thing is worse than expected. Let's hope it's not. But obviously, that's not the most important thing in that situation. You ready to move to pick 64?
I am. I'll hit that in 1 second, because I got to hit on Angry Drunken German first. ADG, thank you for being here. I know we finally did a show at 5 o'clock, and we did it just for you, right? This is all for you, my guy. Always appreciate you, man. He goes, stay on point, Holmes. I'd prefer a prostate exam to an NBA dissertation. Hey, that's tough, but fair. You do have to remember, I did work for the 76ers for a couple of years, so I am still NFL number one.
It's a good
baseball
comp.
Number two, but
it's the closest recent comp we have to what the Chiefs are building in Kansas City and how they changed the game. I think the Warriors are the best comp we have in modern sports.
Yeah, I agree. Pick 64, Dane Brugler has the Chiefs taking Rutgers cornerback Max Melton, 5'11", 187 pounds, 21 years old. Dane Brugler's take says, quote, overall, Melton brings explosive speed and attitude to his coverage, which will interest press man teams. His experience inside and outside will help him see the field right away in the NFL, end quote. He has him as CB11.
Yeah, I think one of the things to dig in here, I really like TJ Tampa, but he's not a plus athlete. And one of the things, if you go back and you look at Joshua Williams, Jalen Watson, Legarius Sneed, Troy McDuffie is a great athlete, just not very big. He likes these RAS, these relative athletic score all-stars at corner. He's looking for athleticism. Guys who can play press and run. So I'm not sure he is exactly that. Also, corner in the second round. They've been so good at finding defensive backs late in the draft. Is this just too early for a team that already recently picked a first round corner when they're so good at unearthing these late round gems in the defensive backfield?
No. I don't, actually. I don't think it's too early. Would I prefer this? Not necessarily, but with the loss of Legarius Sneed, I do think you need a influx of relatively stable talent there. Mm-hmm. You have Trent McDuffie, but I still have wonders of, is he inside or is he going to be a slot guy? He was all pro, first team all pro slot corner last year. But is he a all pro outside corner? Is he going to travel? Like, Legarius was that guy. He's no longer here. Where do they and what do they do with Trent McDuffie? That's intriguing to me. I love Joshua Williams, okay? But he's a little up and down. Jalen Watson had a little bit of a slide last year, would you say?
Sophomore slump, yeah.
Yeah, and I still like him. I think he's a valuable piece, but I would not mind an influx of talent. I get what you're saying with the late round corners. They've been so good at that. I would completely agree. But if you think there's some value here, if you think there's some value with a guy who's able to step in by game three, game four, and go alongside or play on the outside with Trent McDuffie and Williams, I think you'd feel pretty comfortable there. Because I think that was the biggest strength of Kansas City last year was their secondary. They were nails. They were locked down. They were so talented. They took away teams' receivers nonstop. It didn't matter if teams had Tyreek and Jalen Waddle and all these guys. Yeah, have fun. Good luck. I'm all in on keeping your strength. And if they have to invest a little earlier than I would prefer in the cornerback room to make that happen, well, we saw it work last year. Why not back to back?
There is some mystery around Trent McDuffie. Great corner, phenomenal corner. But Legarius Sneed has some size. And if you think about Trent McDuffie traveling with Davante Adams or A.J. Brown, maybe most of all, things get a little bit more dicey potentially. But then again, in the Super Bowl, we saw him surgically attached to Brandon Ayuk. So also mentioning Chimeri Conner here seems important because coming out of last year's draft, a lot of people thought he was a kind of a slot guy, half safety, half slot. So he may shift in there some, allowing Trent McDuffie to play outside. I think they can find a corner later. And there's also another corner I really like here. Let's run through some still on the board guys. Oregon defensive tackle Brandon Dorlus and Western Kentucky wide receiver Malachi Corley, a.k.a. the Yak King. That's a guy Andy Reid might be interested in. Our trade-up options are around 63, Kentucky cornerback Andrew Phillips. That's the guy I really like. He is a very spazzy corner, very physical, will remind you of guys like Travarius Ward and Legarius Sneed. Florida State defensive tackle Braden Fisk, South Carolina wide receiver Xavier Leggett. That's Sterling's guy, really crazy up and down 4 years before absolutely tearing the roof off in his fifth year at South Carolina. Is that how you would classify it?
Yeah, we'll go with that. I'm going to ask him. I'm supposed to talk to him on Friday. I want to ask him and just talk and get his thoughts and basically just say, yo, you were phenomenal last year, but Why did it take until last year? So I'm going to try and dig deep and get some questions from Xavier Legettigan, a guy who I think has some real, real potential, star potential in the NFL.
Yeah, very curious case there. Around 57, pick 57, we have UConn guard Christian Haynes. Could be a potential either Tooney or a Trey Smith replacement. We have Clemson defensive tackle Rook Aroro. The H's are silent, I've been told. And at 53, we have, I think that's Philly's pick. And Philly's a team that might be really willing to deal with Brett Veach and Andy Reid. We have my guy, Texas tight end, Jadavion Sanders, JT Sanders. You like any of those names other than obviously Leggett?
Andrew Phillips at 63, but again, that's San Fran. That's just how much you're willing to give up to move up one pick. I think that's interesting. I think Fisk is interesting because I've seen him sometimes at the back end of the first round or early second, and he's right there, at least in this one, going at what pick is that? Like 58, 61, something like that. I think pick 61.
Yeah.
I think Fisk is intriguing personally. I get he's more of a outside and edge rusher than I think a tackle, but he can do a little bit of both, I've been told. It's going to be tough. Again, I think we all want trade ups and trade backs, but at least doing this particular scenario, I think it's kind of good to stay at 64 than trying to trade up. I don't know your thoughts here, but
I love Andrew Phillips. I think he would be special in this system, but it depends on the price. And again, they're so good at finding corners. It would probably be more of a case if they actually wanted to trade up. Maybe even they don't have a wide receiver yet and Troy Franklin somehow slips into the 50s, or Ricky Pearsall is still available later than he should be. Maybe they'll do that. I think it will probably be easier for the Chiefs to find a trade partner as the draft progresses. Because other teams don't feel like they're giving the dynasty a marquee weapon. You know what I mean? Trade back options here. I know some locals will like this one. Probably around pick 70, 71, Kansas guard Dominic Pooney.
I love that. I if the Chiefs are able to get him in the third round, I would be beyond thrilled. I don't think he's going to be there. Obviously, according to Dan Brugler, he doesn't think he is either. And this is coming from a Mizzou guy. I think Dominic Pooney is your he's your super sub. Like that would be my pick. If I had my druthers of Andrew Wiley or your Nick Allegretti, which again I know those guys were later round draft picks that developed, but Dominic Pooney is a in my opinion, an upgraded early on version of those dudes.
A swing guard / swing tackle in a pinch, maybe. Washington wide receiver, Jalen Polk, around 74. And this is where things get kind of crazy when we're prognosticating this time of year, because a few days ago, Peter Schrager in his mock, and he is very dialed in, had Jalen Polk going 32 to the Chiefs. Now, since he said that wasn't necessarily that he's linked to the Chiefs, he just thinks he's rising on boards. He's kind of a ready-made quarterback-friendly player who I think teams will like more than, I guess, the draft industrial complex. So definitely watch him. And that's just something overall that I'd add here. You look at like PFF's big board and then Dane Brugler's big board. There is a lot of variance there. You will see guys 60 spots lower. So it's really, you feel like you're playing pin the tail on the donkey sometimes, right?
I do that all the time. Best. I do that in my free time. Actually, I'll blindfold myself and try and do that. Turns out, I break a lot of TVs that way. I think Jalen Polk at 32 would be disheartening, but if you want to look back throughout history, Peter Schrager's been pretty damn good in predicting things. Super Bowl winners as well as draft picks. But I think, and quite frankly, I hope he's wrong on this one.
It's a reach. And I really like him, but I like him at 50 at the earliest. But Schrager said last year that Mingo was going to go much earlier than expected. He rose all the way up to 39. So a couple more names here. Around 74, you have Kamari Lassiter, the cornerback from Georgia. Just another quarterback option. And then a guy I really like, kind of arbitrage, A.D. Mitchell. bargain bin A.D. Mitchell, UNC wide receiver Devontae Walker. He's not as good or as polished as A.D. Mitchell or Brian Thomas Jr. Probably doesn't even have the same upside. But if you're looking for that vertical X, he is probably your last option.
Yeah. Then moving to the third round pick, pick 95. Dan Brugler has the Chiefs picking Boston College guard Christian. Middle name is last name Mahogany. He is 6'3", 314, 23.6 years old. So a little bit older for a pick. Christian Mahogany, guard from BC. Dan Brugler's take says, quote, overall, Mahogany needs to play with more control, especially in space, to survive versus NFL defenders. But he plays like a bouncer outside of a club, looking to bash heads with power and forceful hands. He projects as a guard, versatile NFL starter, ideally suited for a downhill run team, end quote. Part of that sounds like the Chiefs with the Trey Smith, bouncers outside of a club. But then you get to the ideally suited for a downhill run team. I think traditionally you would say, oh, that doesn't make any sense. But when you have Isaiah Pacheco back there, it makes more sense than I think we maybe believe at first glance. The Chiefs offensive line has really gone from we're going to be athletic, we're going to be finesse, to being more of a intimidating, physical O-line, and this would be a step in that Trey Smith direction, and maybe this would be a replacement for Trey Smith, if you will. A guy in the third round, if you think Trey Smith's going to cost too much money to bring back, maybe you would go this way.
Yeah, and as they become a more balanced team, that's already happened. They had one of the best defenses in the league last year. They might want their running game to salt away games instead of just continuously putting everything on Patrick Mahomes' shoulders. We know he can take everything on his shoulders, but you want to make things easier for your quarterback. Love the Anchorman joke, by the way. Still on the board, you have another Sterling favorite. That is UNC wide receiver Brendan Rice, son of Jerry Rice, the greatest receiver of all time, arguably. You have Auburn cornerback DJ James, a guy I like, and LSU defensive tackle Mekhi Wingo. And then we have
for Mizzou. He just bounced just to go to LSU. How dare you, Mekhi?
He likes Tigers. He has a thing for Tigers, obviously. And then you have the local favorite from Kansas State, tight end Ben Sennett. I think a lot of fans are going to like him at 95. I heard a scout compare him to George Kittle today. That kind of got my spider senses tingling a little bit. So
you know why? They did the same thing. George Kittle was number like 48 in college. Ben Sennett was 34 in college. You watch those guys run, you're like, that's a fullback. That's Kyle Juszczyk. What are we doing here? If they wore number 87 or 88, we're all sitting here going, yep, that guy's a stud. That guy's phenomenal. I'm not the first person to say this. I know it's very silly. I mean, very, very silly. But I think there's a slight truth to when you wear this unconventional number, almost a fullback number, you look slower. You look less athletic. You look...
He's really athletic, though.
Insane. Ben Sennett is 6'4", 6'5", with a 40-inch vertical at 250. It's nuts. Ben Sennett is wildly athletic. But when you see the number, you see sometimes how he was used. You're like, well, can he be this great receiving threat? Actually, I think he's a better receiving threat than a blocker. So, yes, I do. I would love Ben Sennett in the third round. I don't know how much sense it makes, again, for roster construction. But it's how long do you have Travis Kelce? What do you think of Noah Gray? They brought in Irv Smith, but I don't think Irv Smith is anything more than a depth piece. Even heard Andy Reid during one of his quotes, he was asked about a couple of players. The second guy was Irv Smith. And he goes, now who's the second guy you asked about? And he goes, oh yeah, Irv Smith. And he goes, Irv Smith is a tight end. First thing he says, Irv Smith is a tight end. We know, but if that's your leading comment on a guy is he's a tight end. Like, I'm sorry. What? Normally you're like, oh yeah, this guy's awesome. He's fast. He's quick. He does all these things. Yeah, Irv Smith, he's a tight end.
Obviously not a big red signing, probably more of a Veach pick there. I will say this. If the Chiefs three-peat, we don't want to envision this, but Travis Kelce might ride off into the sunset.
Bleep you, dude.
I mean, what more, just honestly, what more do he says he's been playing in a lot of pain. He's had something like 10 surgeries. What more does he have to accomplish on the field? He has big dreams off the field.
Four in a row.
Well, that would be.
You never leave when you're on a heater. These are the rules, best. You never leave when you're on a heater. And then eventually they'll lose one. And you can't leave when you're losing. So then he keeps playing until the Chiefs win again. And then that's the cycle.
Well, eventually he's going to leave. And neither Noah Gray or the aforementioned Irv Smith are under contract next year. So I think they need to start planning ahead. The question is, how early do they want to do that in this draft? Or do they want to do it at all in this draft? Because next year, presumably, will be a better tight end class. Some trade up options here. This one is maybe the most interesting player in the draft outside the first round. And around 83rd, that's where Brugler has him. Alabama wide receiver Jermaine Burton. He's a top 50 talent. Maybe even a first round talent, but serious neon glowing character concerns. He might slide round 4, round 5. We know the Chiefs. They see a guy like this slide into round 4 or round 5. Are they going to be able to resist? Even with Kadarius Toney and Rashee Rice and everything else going on with the Chiefs, I don't know if they can resist. All Sterling can do is shake his head no right now.
I'm with you. I don't think the Chiefs. It's always mind blowing to me because it's guys will have character concerns. You're like, well, you can't draft him in the first round. You can't do this. You can't draft him that early. But then all of a sudden you draft him in the fifth, and you're like, well, that team did a great job. You know. But if you draft him the third, all of a sudden now you're a bad team because you glossed over character concerns. Like I always think it's so, I don't mean to bring up previous situations in Chiefs history, but like, again, this was different because Kareem Hunt, you know, he lied, all that stuff. So he was never coming back. But just the situation of when he left, you have to let him go. You got to cut him. But because the Browns give him a second chance, a lot of folks were applauding the Browns for giving a guy another opportunity in the NFL. Yet if the Chiefs were to bring him back, all of a sudden you're going, well, how can you keep him around? How can you do this? It's just politics. It's all about perception. That's what always makes me laugh. Again, with a guy like, it's all about like a guy like Burton. It's like, well, when is it okay to draft a guy who's very talented because of some concerns? It's silly to me.
A couple of their names here. Yale offensive tackle, Karan. I don't have the pronunciation here.
That actually is his last name. It's Karan. I don't have the pronunciation here. That it's a wild last name.
We're going to roll with it. I mean, thanks for the save there. And then 87, 90th, somewhere around there, Tennessee running back Jalen Wright. I like him a lot. And don't be surprised if on day two, the Chiefs take a running back. I'm just going to plant that flag for you guys here. I know some of you might not like to hear it, but I just have a feeling that they're going to be looking. They're going to be doing some shopping there. Some trade back options. 108, 110, these guys. Duke defensive tackle, Dwayne Carter. Virginia wide receiver, Malik Washington. He's a slot-only guy, but if you're looking for hidden value in this draft, that's a good option right there. And then Oregon cornerback Kyree Jackson, who he's giant, man. He's like 6'3", 6'4", has a huge wingspan. Very rare frame for a cornerback. I think that Spags and the Chiefs would probably be interested in him.
Yeah, it seems almost like, that's a little bigger Josh Williams. Like, if you like Josh Williams, you like him. That there's it's got to be the same Venn diagram there.
Maybe the chat can help us, but the Chiefs had a guy. I think he also played for Denver. I'm just not coming up with the name right now, but he was like 6'3 or 6'4, played corner for a couple of years in the AFC West, and I'm just not recalling it. Let's move to pick 131 and running back. Like I said, Oregon running back Bucky Irving. He's 5'9. 192 pounds, 21.6 years old. Here's Brugler's take. Overall, Irving is undersized and underpowered, but he has pass-catching skills and instinctive run qualities to quickly sort and make sharp directional cuts to daylight. He projects as an NFL complementary back who can be a productive changeup in a committee. like former UNC running back Michael Carter. He's running back 8 in this draft, according to Brugler. So my notes here are that he hits the same Venn diagram of slow and small that CEH hits. And I don't like that. No matter how silky he is in the passing game, no matter how much of a dog he is in pass pro, gosh, you have to have either size or athleticism at the running back position.
Yeah. I think I'm with you. You know, he was very productive at Oregon, right? And you do want the ability to have a pass catcher, but I think we've all been scarred a little bit by, oh, well, CEH is a great pass catcher. He's phenomenal out there. The Chiefs don't really use their running backs in that way because Mahomes is typically looking downfield. Now, obviously, McKinnon had a lot of success, but it wasn't just consistent game after game, year after year, right? He went on stretches, but it wasn't necessarily like this, oh, yeah, he's good for 5 and 50 almost every single game. You can check down to him.
Chiefs are red zone, right?
Yeah, it's a red zone. The Chiefs don't really use their running backs that way. So how valuable is that skill set? It just does feel like a pick the Chiefs would make, though. I don't know why the Chiefs don't go for the burst guys, the super fast running backs. I love Pacheco. That's just not his game either.
Yeah, but he was the fastest, running back in his class. So,
no, but what I'm talking about, like burst, when you see Pacheco, when he's in the open field, yes, but he's not a guy that typically takes the ball and you're like, oh, that's a quick first burst. That's not his game. You wouldn't necessarily have him on a outside run and be like, that's where I want to see him. No, you kind of want on the inside. Like you want him up the gut. That's where I think Pacheco really thrives. Mm-hmm. And yet the Chiefs run a lot of outside runs with guys like Clyde and Pacheco where that's not really their game. So if we're looking through Chiefs history, they probably would draft a Bucky Irving instead of a guy who probably has that quick first step.
Yeah. So still on the board here, Michigan guard Zach Zinter and Clemson linebacker. Here's a blast from the past. If you remember his dad, Jeremiah Trotter Jr. Yeah. Some trade up options here around 109, 110. Texas defensive tackle Tavondre Sweat. I know you are a fan. He recently got a DWI. There's also big concerns about his fitness, how seriously he takes his weight. A little bit later, 120-ish, Mizzou offensive tackle Javon Foster. You have thoughts on him as a Mizzou guy?
Yeah, he's solid. I think it's about right where he should be, right around the fourth round. Mizzou's been historically solid with offensive linemen. I mean, they've had a good amount of O linemen into the NFL, more than you'd think, actually. Yeah, Javon Foster, I think he's solid. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, yeah, Javon Foster, he's going to be a stud. I'd be lying to you. I'd be in a homer. But I think fourth round is the value for a guy like Javon Foster or late third.
Developmental project, right?
Sure, yeah.
Now, here's the guy I really like in the mid-120s, and that is Clemson running back Will Shipley. If you are looking for a Jerick McKinnon that you can get on in the fourth, maybe even the fifth round, that's the guy. So small. He's definitely small. A little bit of Danny Woodhead maybe in him, but he is a plus-plus athlete. Let's look at some trade back options here. I was really surprised by some of these names, especially the wide receivers, because PFF had some of these guys way, way higher. Same with other big boards. We're talking 140s here. FSU quarterback safety, Renardo Green. FSU wide receiver, Johnny Wilson. Very big, rare kind of specimen. Could be a spectacular bust or a kind of hidden gem. And then one of my favorites, Louisville wide receiver, Jamari Thrash. He's kind of a little bit of a poor man's Jaden Reed, maybe. And lastly, Miami defensive tackle, Leonard Taylor III.
Yeah. Let's get into pick 159. Brugler has the Chiefs taking Washington State edge Brennan Jackson, 6'4", 264, 24.2 years old. Dude is up there for a rookie. Brugler's take is, overall, Jackson's body tightness and lack of balance will follow him to the NFL, but so will his urgent attacking skills and relentless motor. He projects as a rotational edge defender for a scheme that can turn him loose. It's almost, to an extent, like the opposite version of Mike Dana, but kind of close, right? Like, doesn't it feel like instead of like a, like the run stuffer, but like, oh, let's try and see if we can get after the quarterback, but still a rotational guy. It almost feels like him and Mike Dana create one super stud.
Here's the issue with Dane Brugler in this pick. He obviously knows this class, and I have no doubt that Brennan Jackson 160 is pretty close to where he'll go. However, this would be extremely old for a Brett Veach pick. He's in the top five in terms of picking the youngest players with his draft picks. Also, the arm length, 24th percentile. That is a poor Spags fit. He really likes he doesn't like the T-Rex arms. He likes the pterodactyl arms. So I just don't see this one. Some other guys that are still on the board, New Hampshire running back Dylan Lobb, another kind of satellite back type. South Dakota defensive back Miles Harden. I think the Chiefs always like plucking these guys from these weird, small, random schools. And then pit guard Matt Gonzalez. If you see how it's spelled, that's like kind of a crazy pronunciation, but I guess it's Portuguese. So that's kind of like last call for potential starter offensive lineman, I would say.
Yeah. Then we get into pick 173, LSU defensive tackle, the guy alongside Mekhi Wingo, Jordan Jefferson. He's 6'3", 313. Brugler's take is overall Jefferson needs to develop his technical efficiency to be more disruptive, but his burst off the ball and upper body strength give him an early advantage into battle. He projects as a rotational lineman on the interior who still has some upside left.
Yeah, defensive tackle 20. We're getting in the range where will these guys even make the team? It's hard to say. Still on the board, this guy is a really, really fun player. Utah safety / running back. No, that was not a mistake. He really is a two-way star. Sione Vaki, he was on Bruce Feldman's freaks list. Really exciting player. Hasn't played that much football. He's a sophomore, but he went on a church mission for 2 years. So I kind of think he has more potential as a running back, but people have different thoughts on that. Iowa tight end Eric All, if they're kind of wanting to do some deep discount shopping there.
Oh, and Iowa? Yeah, I'm in. Draft him. It's Iowa.
Counterpoint, Noah Fant.
I still like Noah Fant.
He's all right. He's all right. I think the problem with Noah Fant is he was picked in the first round.
Correct.
So if he was picked wherever George Kittle was picked, I forget, and George Kittle was picked in the first round, that would make more sense. And then the last name here is Memphis running back Blake Watson. We're mentioning a lot of pass catching satellite back types here because someone has to fill that Jerick McKinnon role.
Yeah. We get to pick 221. They have Dan Brugler has South Dakota State offensive tackle Garrett Greenfield, who is 6'6". 311 at 24 years old. Brugler's take is, quote, overall, Greenfield must make improvements to anchor and recovery skills to combat NFL opponents, but he's a smooth moving big man who's at his best on wide and mid zone plays. He projects as a potential swing tackle in the NFL. He has him as offensive tackle 22.
You like those wide plays because he's going to have a lot of those playing with Patrick Mahomes. He's going to have to set wide, deep, all that. This guy actually broke the combine vertical for all offensive linemen ever. He's got a 40-inch vert at 311 pounds. I mean, that is just...
Wait, 40?
40, yeah.
Are you sure it's 40?
It's right there. I mean, let's look it up.
If it's 40...
I think it's 39, but it's close.
If it's 30, that's insane. He's 311 pounds and 6'6".
Yeah.
Get him in the dunk contest.
Here we go. Vertical, 38.5. Okay, pretty close to 40. That's crazy. That's crazy. But his arms aren't super long for an Andy Heck tackle, so that comes into play here. But this late in the draft, you have a guy that is that kind of athlete. You just redshirt him, take a chance, and hope that, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line, he can become a tackle that maybe can get on the field, even if he's a swing tackle.
And I will say, you know, your jumping ability is very important for a tackle. I can't even say
what he's trying. What do you think Orlando Brown Jr.'s vertical is?
Nine.
I think you're being generous. He's got like a pancake vertical.
But it doesn't matter. Like,
no, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Unless you're, it's impressive nonetheless. It's almost like Colin Saunders, who was doing backflips, right? Mm-hmm. How does that translate? It doesn't, but it's fun to watch these incredible athletes. You're sitting here going, well, if you can do something like that, well, maybe you can unlock some more of the athletic potential. I think that's what it comes down
to. I think it points to some rare explosion, both with Saunders and with Greenfield here. Some other players still on the board. Colorado State tight end Dallin Hulker. It's a player I like. Again, some bargain basement tight end shopping. Washington State cornerback Shaw Smith Wade could be an option for the Chiefs. They like to grab their sixth and seventh round corners. And then running back Dylan Johnson, he's kind of the last call here, at least on Brugler's board, for a running back who can presumably make the team. Although maybe the Chiefs find an undrafted guy there. That's what they did last year. Didn't quite work out, but it's another option.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on this pick 221 or the draft overall?
Yeah, just I think this is a good tool. It's way different than a lot of other drafts I have seen. Dane Brugler, though, is very good at what he does, so I think it's a great tool to go over with everyone. I hope everyone else enjoyed this as well, trying to get a unique, different perspective. The draft is the draft. It's very – whatever you think is going to happen, it's not going to happen. I think I've gotten one draft pick where I feel like I've nailed it, and that was George Karloftis. That was one where I go, the Chiefs drafted George Karloftis, they drafted George Karloftis, and he was good. Like, it's just, it's so difficult. You can spend all this time, all the research, all the studying, but you cannot get inside of the domes of players and find what makes them tick. And that's what the great ones do. Brett Veach has done a phenomenal job as he's grown as a GM. His first two drafts were not great. Then he got to 20, 21, 22, 23. He's been improving, and that's all you can ask for with a GM. A 50% hit rate almost overall in his entire GM career has to be considered a massive success. So I think at some point we sit back and we trust the dude who has helped Kansas City hoist 3 Lombardis in the past 5 years. On a separate note here, I did interview Julian Edelman today, and that interview will be dropping in the next couple of days. He talked so much Kansas City with me. It was a blast talking with Edelman about the Chiefs and the similarities of the Patriots dynasty compared to Kansas City's.
Can't wait to see that.
It was a lot of fun with Edelman. I did also bring up, if anyone else remembers this, he actually played defense against the Chiefs one game in 2011. I asked him this, and he had a lot of fun going back and forth with me about him trying to defend Jamal Charles. So if you don't remember that, Julian Edelman and myself will break it down in that interview I did. So take a look at it in the next couple of days.
That's what Troy Brown did, I think, some too as well.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
So this time of year, and I think this show in particular, it feels like we're cramming for a final exam in college or something. There's so much information to sift through. And particularly when you're the Chiefs and you're picking at the end of each round, you're sort of at the mercy of all these other teams. And good luck trying to predict the New England Patriots, speaking of Julian Edelman. I mean, or the Raiders, who knows what their board's going to look like. They may have a guy in the first round that all other teams have in the third or whatever. So I think we're just going to have to hang in there throughout the first round. Next Thursday night, we will be here to help you survive the waiting game. But that's all we've got for you guys today. Props to the chat. We appreciate you guys. Please hit the like button and subscribe if you haven't. That really helps us. Audio pod listeners, consider giving us a 5-star review on either Spotify or Apple. That will help us reach more Chiefs fans. Join us next Wednesday at 5 p.m. Central. That's our new time. We're trying to reach more of the, I guess, after work crowd than we did when we were at 4:30. That's going to be right here on the Arrowhead Addict channel. Until then, go Chiefs. Here we go.